Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Have you made the switch to Knix? Millions of women have made the switch to the revolutionary period underwear from Knix. That's K-N-I-X. Period panties from Knix are like no other, making them the number one leak-proof underwear brand in North America. They're comfy, stylish, and absorbent, perfect for period protection from your lightest to your heaviest days. They look, feel, and machine wash just like regular underwear, but feature incognito protection that has you covered. You can shop sizes from extra small to 4XL. Choose from all kinds of colors, prints, and different styles, from bikinis to boy shorts, thongs to high-rise. You've got to try Knix. See why millions are ditching disposable, wasteful period products and have switched to Knix. Go to knix.com and get 15% off with promo code TRY15. That's knix.com, promo code TRY15 for 15% off life-changing period underwear. That's KNIX.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Hi, hello there. This is Let's Talk About Myths, Baby. And I am that host of yours, the one who wants to stir the pot with truth and knowledge. Because isn't that fun? I'm Liv. Today, I'm here with another wonderful and fun conversation episode. This week, I spoke with Caribbean scholar and writer Princess Onaika Auguste, who has a master's in biblical studies and a passion for Greek mythology. Princess combines all of this badass ancient knowledge to spread fascinating facts about it all. As someone who has absolutely no grounding in anything biblical, like truly almost a complete lack of knowledge in that history, I was thrilled to speak with Princess. I mean, we don't really talk about that at all, actually, but still, it's really interesting. Instead, we talk about the world of Greek myth, their interactions with people from what is now modern Africa and Asia, and the general whitewashing of history and mythology, of course. We talk a lot about pop culture, representations of mythology, and history too. It was super fun. Now, we do play it a little fast and loose with using modern region names, because that's just kind of the easiest way to do it when you're trying to describe where you're talking about. But just remember, all of that is modern, just like even the notion of whiteness and blackness is a modern construct. Of course, it's very relevant for what we're talking about, so we also do, you know, discuss all of that very broadly. And another note is that we recorded this a while back, like in December maybe, so you will hear moments where I've clearly not researched people like Memnon and Greek myths of Africa, because, well, I hadn't yet. And you might hear Princess's adorable baby kitten meowing at some points. But I mean, who can complain about a baby kitten? Otherwise, sit back and enjoy. We had such a fun and great conversation. Conversations, Black Achilles, African Queens, and Whitewashing of Greek Myth, with Princess Onaika Auguste. What do you study generally?
New Testament Bible. I wanted to go into the classics, but in St. Lucia, the high schools don't do Latin and Greek. And so when I was going to university, a lot of universities want you to have that high school Latin and Greek. It didn't happen. So I'm trying to combine the two, because even like when you read the New Testament, you do see some of the stuff that was going on in Greece. It's, you know, that Paul was going into Corinth and these places to convert the people from worshiping Artemis and Zeus. So you can still see the, you know, because the New Testament was written around that time. So.
Yeah, they're so connected for sure. But I'm thrilled to talk about, like, I mean, I guess we just want to cover people of color in Greek myth and definitely the whitewashing of it because it really is such a huge thing. Like, I'm constantly kind of trying to do things like that, but it is so hard too, just because, like, even the way the Greek myths are told often is sort of like just leaves out the other regions that everyone came from. But obviously so many people in Greek myth were very explicitly from Africa and the Middle East and sort of everywhere. So Perseus and Andromeda, I think, are some of the, yeah, definitely some of like the most obvious and the most egregious, because Andromeda is not only from Ethiopia, but I actually learned that according to some sources, like, she's from Ethiopia, but she's also from Phoenicia originally. And then they like founded a city in Ethiopia, or like, you know, ancient Ethiopia, which I don't actually know where in Africa it corresponds to, because they definitely had broad swaths that are not, you know, the modern countries.
But I was reading something from Herodotus, and then some scholars are saying that when he was referring to Ethiopia, he wasn't also referring to sub-Sahara Africa. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense, because even, you know, they called, I mean, they had Egypt, obviously, but of course that too, like, they have sort of a timeline in Greek mythology for when it took the name Egypt, because they like to make it a Greek guy named Egypt. But it's interesting because they call, yeah, much of North Africa, they just call it Libya. As to sort of like refer to the whole of the region. So it's kind of hard to track where, but obviously it's like, regardless, it's Africa.
Yeah, it is. And then the fact is that Andromeda has been, when you see her in paintings and stuff, she's white. But if you're talking about Ethiopian princess, whether it's Ethiopia, the modern country, or whether it's Ethiopia and sub-Sahara Africa, she's going to be brown or black. Mm-hmm. So I'm not necessarily saying the Greeks are the ones that, ancient Greeks are not necessarily the ones that are whitewashing. It's modern day people who are painting and writing about these ancient Greek, because, you know, it falls into the white supremacy thing that Greek and Rome were white countries.
Exactly, yeah, in air quotes, white. Yeah.
I was just having some weeks ago, I was having an argument with some guy on Twitter and he onto some boy's page. I can't remember whose Twitter page. I'm not sure. It wasn't yours, but it was somebody else. And then he was saying that, oh, but Greece and Rome were white. And I'm saying that it's problematic to say Greece and Rome were white, because first, Greek cities extended not only in Europe, but also into Asia and Africa. And then you have Greek, a lot of the Greek gods came from these places in Asia or Africa. And then you have the Roman Empire. They interacted with Black people. The Romans had a 5-year war with the Kush. They had a 5-year war with Kush. And the Carthaginians, they had wars with the Carthaginians. And their people were going into Greek and Roman cities freely, because again, Rome and Greece did not extend to Rome and Greece. It extended to, in the case of the Roman Empire, extended all the way to Germany and then England. And in Asia, Alexander the Great went into India. Mm-hmm. So how can you say that? And he had his soldiers marry into those Iranian Indian women. Mm-hmm. So how can you say that the Romans and Greeks were a white country? And even then, when you think of Rome and Greece, they're not the typical whiteness people. Because even in our modern time, early modern history, Italians and Greeks were not considered white in the United States until recently.
Yeah, that's so true. I think, like you said at the beginning, it all comes down to white supremacy and just this idea of the big problematic idea of, like, quote unquote, Western civilization, right? This idea that, like, the West brought everything good and beautiful and wonderful. And then, you know, very recently, this, like, level of whiteness, this, like, imposed whiteness, you know, has been put upon ancient Greece and ancient Rome, when in fact, exactly like you're saying, you know, they were spread across the whole of the region, and they didn't have any kind of concept of whiteness or blackness or color, skin color being an issue. Like, they had xenophobia, like, they were not great, but it wasn't about what skin color you had. It was more about, like, where you were from and what language you spoke. And, you know, and the where you were from was more connected to what language you spoke. Like, if you were from Africa, but you spoke Greek and you were brought up Greek, then you were Greek.
Yeah.
You know, it did not matter about, yeah, what you looked like or anything. And then in order to perpetuate this idea that the Western world, you know, invented everything great and good and wonderful, and then therefore to continue on with, like, the white supremacist idea, is just the nature of putting whiteness upon these people after the fact, as if they've always been had this, like, whiteness attached to them. Because then I've encountered other issues similar where I've then explained that point about whiteness being put upon them later, and then people will still come at me and yell and, like, be like, well, but, you know, Greece and Rome aren't white. And I'm like, I know, that's, like, literally what I'm saying. But because it's, like, the way people sort of attach themselves to this idea, like, for either side of it, and then sort of, I don't know, they tend to jump down your throat on the internet no matter what, because the internet's not a great place for, like, nuance and, like, detailed discussions. I tried to do this in an Instagram reel where I talked about that, and I was like, oh no, it turns out 60 seconds is not enough time to explain this issue without people screaming at you.
Yeah, maybe do a TikTok.
Yeah, you got 3 minutes in TikTok now. Exactly, lots more time.
Yeah. And then, yeah, they didn't really have an issue of racial the way we know it, but there was a lot of ethnic ethnocentrism. And you can be a Black man and you speak in Greek or Latin, you were Roman or Greek. But if you weren't assimilated to Greek or Roman culture, you were barbarian, or you were not, you were just trash.
Yeah.
And the thing about it, the white supremacists and others and their allies like to say that the Western the Greeks, the Western world invented everything. But if they understood, if they do their history and their research, you know, the Greeks and Romans borrowed a lot from Asia and Africa.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the Mesopotamians were there basically first, doing everything, you know, inventing a lot of the stuff that the Greeks then get credit for.
Yeah.
And similarly, Egypt, you know, both Mesopotamia and Egypt were highly advanced before Greece and Rome. And yet this idea is that ancient Greece and Rome were sort of like foundations of our society today, which, of course, yeah, is inherently linked to, you know, Western supremacy, if not outright white supremacy. And the problem with all of it, too, is that it's so under the surface. Like, it's not people, it's not always people who are explicitly white supremacists who perpetuate this idea. It's people who have this, that ingrained white supremacy, right? That's like built in, especially if you grew up in North America, and I think in the UK as well. It's really like ingrained into you, this idea of Western supremacy, Western, you know, everything, but you don't necessarily know that's what you're believing until you kind of really break it down and look at the problematic nature of all of it, you know, and think about who did actually invent these things and why do we think that it is other people that invented them? Like, why, you know, because all of that is connected with this idea of, you know, the greatness of the West and therefore the greatness of whiteness, even though, of course, like, you know, if you even dive into that, it's like, well, the West isn't even particularly white generally, but it's just the, you know, the white nations that have sort of overtaken everything.
And also, even when you talk about Greek and Rome, when we have the Renaissance, the rediscovery of Greece and Rome, the Arabs had saved a lot of the ancient Greek and Roman texts before the Renaissance. So people like to say that the Renaissance in Europe was how the world rediscovered ancient Greek and Roman, but actually the Arabs actually saved a lot of those texts.
Yeah, that's so true, and they rarely get any kind of credit for it. Absolutely.
Another thing I realized, remember Troy, the fall of the city, that bad Netflix. I mean, it wasn't bad per se.
I haven't seen it all, I'll admit. I haven't seen it all.
I don't know. It didn't really, like, you know, like Brad Pitt's Troy and the other movies and series based on the Trojan War. It was actually, it was actually closer to the actual story than all the previous other incarnations. But when people saw there was a black Zeus, they were like, there was backlash against the series because it wasn't all that good, but there was backlash when they saw a black Zeus and a black
Achilles, right?
I can't remember. I haven't seen it in a while. But a few of the main characters were black or people of color.
Yeah, which is, of course, accurate, because then when you get to Brad Pitt's Troy and everything, you know, everyone is super white for the fact that they're like fighting in Turkey. Like, Troy is in Turkey, you know. The idea that Orlando Bloom is just hanging out being a Trojan is pretty ridiculous, you know, not to mention all of the so-called Greek characters are also, you know, much whiter British people. So yeah, and I guess Americans too with Brad Pitt, that's the thing, right? It's, you know, pop culture really perpetuates that as well. Going back to Andromeda, there is the sequel, or no, I guess it's both of them, you know, both the Clash of the Titans movies, the more recent ones, have Andromeda as this like lily white woman. And there's, of course, no mention that he's saving her from an Ethiopian island where she is a princess, or not island, but Ethiopian kingdom where she is a princess. And Andromeda as well, you know, she, in the actual mythology, she is the mother of, like, everyone. Like, she and Perseus basically start most of what becomes like all of the Greek mythological characters and heroes. Yeah. And so, yeah, the idea that she was, you know, either straight up Ethiopian or a Phoenician who came to Ethiopia, like either way, she's from either, you know, the Levant, the Middle East, or just Africa. And it's just a fascinating thing to see how white she has been portrayed in everything.
Yes. Yeah. And the fact that Aphrodite, if we say, you know, we know Aphrodite has two birth narratives.
Mm-hmm.
She's the daughter of Zeus and Dion, and then she comes from the sea and from Cyprus.
Mm-hmm.
Cyprus is near Turkey. I know Greece and Turkey had this big thing with Cyprus, but Cyprus is near Turkey, and she's not going to be a lily white goddess.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even, you know, if you take her origins from a historical standpoint too, like she comes from the East, you know, there's a lot of connections that can be made between her and, I always forget the names of the other goddesses because there's a few, but goddesses from the East that, you know, Eastern people then traveled to Greece and the Greeks created the notion of Aphrodite based on that. And similarly with Egyptian goddesses too, right? All of the, you know, everyone was so interconnected back then across the Mediterranean that so many of the Greek and Roman gods come from these ideas from the East. Even Dionysus, they make him really obviously from the East, but they also wanted to make him Greek. So they're like, okay, he's born in Greece, but then he traveled the East and then he came back to Greece. And it's like, okay, like at least they're, you know, they're making these connections to the East, even if they still want to make him explicitly Greek. So it's fascinating to see the ways even, you know, the ancient Greeks weren't doing it from a skin color point of view. They were doing it from a Greek point of view. They were like, these people are Greek, but also they kind of came from the East and we got our ideas from them. You know, it's interesting to see the differences.
Yep. 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 I think Ishtar is one of those goddesses that Aphrodite is like, people from that area merges Aphrodite with Ishtar. But even the gods of Egypt, Isis, is lily white.
Like in like pop culture? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, even there was that Gods of Egypt movie, which, I mean, I did not see because it looked so bad. But everyone is incredibly white.
Yeah, except Thor. What's his name?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Top. The God of Wisdom. At least the God of Wisdom was black.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, who played him? Do you remember?
I remember. I don't know. I haven't seen that movie in years because it was trash.
Yeah, yeah.
That was.
I saw the trailer and I was like, this is bad. I'm not going to watch this. It looks very bad. Yeah, it's fascinating. And, you know, of course, you know, we have Troy's obviously in Turkey. And then, you know, Phoenicia is the other big ancient civilization that is in a lot of Greek myths and that sort of modern Lebanon area. And even the Greeks sort of attributed the Phoenician alphabet with their invention of the Greek alphabet, you know, and it's interesting the way that is often forgotten. But even in their mythology, they have, you know, their Phoenician hero Cadmus, mm-hmm, bringing over the alphabet. And that was their way of understanding that the Phoenician alphabet did intensely influence the creation of the Greek alphabet. And, you know, yeah, the connections are so obvious in the ancient world that it's often like kind of mind-boggling when you look at how much that's been forgotten or ignored or whitewashed in the modern world.
Yes, it has. A lot of the stuff has been whitewashed. I mean Troy, of all of, as much as that the plot line was horrible, Troy of all of the city tried to show how diverse the Greeks were and Greek mythology was, and you know, they tried to do that, and I think if they had a better script it would have, plot wise, it wouldn't have received all that backlash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I'm thinking I should revisit it. For me, what was so distracting was the really regional British accents. And I was just like, this is really distracting.
And then thinking, not necessarily mythology, but thinking with Alexander, with Angelina, mm-hmm, and Julie. Now, who was Alexander? I forgot his name. Whoever was that?
Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell. And at least Roxana was a person of color.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that movie was a little better with it because they kind of had to be, like, they were forced to be because they had to show Alexander going into Persia. And it's like, if you are calling a place Persia, and you're going in there, like, if you don't have people of color in there, like, you're making a really obvious mistake, you know? So I almost feel like they were forced into it just by the region alone. Whereas in Greek mythology, they're able to not mention the regions or make it this, like, mythological ideal, like in, you know, Clash of the Titans and things like that.
Yeah. Like you said, Phoenicia is one of the places named a lot in Greek mythology. Ethiopia, Libya.
Yeah.
It's probably somewhere else, but
I mean, yeah, in the mythology, I think it's mostly those regions because they basically spanned such large swaths of land. Like, you know, when you're reading the myth, it's kind of difficult to tell what the difference was between their ancient versions of Ethiopia and Libya, because both kind of signified huge portions of Africa, at least in the mythology.
Yeah.
And interestingly, I feel like Egypt doesn't actually appear in their mythology all that much. Like, it does,
but not all that much.
No, exactly, which is interesting. Like, and even, you know, just to bring it back to the way the Greeks, you know, tried to, they, I won't use the term whitewashing because that's not what they were doing, but they were, like, kind of Greek washing a lot of things in their mythology. Like, they have the idea that Io, you know, this woman from Argos, the Peloponnese generally, traveled all through Greece and then the East, and then she traveled down to Egypt, and then they have her founding the Egyptian people and becoming Isis, which is a really interesting thing. And it's kind of their way of being like, well, we know the Egyptians were super cool and advanced and, like, super, you know, highly respected, and so let's come up with a myth to make them technically Greek.
Yeah. And don't forget the pygmies in Greek mythology.
Hmm.
They were a tribe of African men.
Oh, and I'm not familiar with them.
I think Hera turned one of the queens into something.
Oh.
Well, let me Google.
Yeah, I'm curious.
Okay, I don't know how to pronounce this Greek name. It's O-E-N-O-E. And she is a pygmy woman. Mm. And she was changed by Hera into a crane because of her impiety. Yeah. Hera also made the pygmies start a war against cranes.
Oh my god.
Yes, yes, yes.
Whoa.
Yeah. So the Greeks had a lot of myths about Africa and Phoenicia and Libya. And don't forget the goddess of dawn's son who fought in the Trojan War. I can't remember his name, but he was an Ethiopian king. I have to read that.
Oh, is it Memnon?
Yeah.
Memnon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they even, did he fight on the side of Troy then?
His father was a Trojan prince.
Right. Yeah, yeah, it's so interesting the way, I mean, of course, in the Iliad is a great example because you have, like, the catalog of ships, and which, you know, is mostly the Greeks, but they did have kind of the equivalent on the side of the Trojans where they were like, these people were from here and these people were from here. And Troy really did kind of pull from, you know, Africa and the whole Middle East with people to help them, including, you know, the Amazons who are from kind of modern Georgia area. But the Amazons were a really interesting group as well, coming in to help sort of from the East generally. Now, Carthage is a really interesting one to me, and doesn't come into Greek, you know, mythology all that much, but I always find it I find it extra dark. Like, it's different than what the Greeks did to try to like influence or to put Greekness upon different regions, because Rome, meanwhile, you know, they had had these wars with the Carthaginians, all the Punic Wars, and completely destroyed this region, and then put Dido, you know, the queen of Carthage, into the Aeneid as this like fallen woman who had to kill herself because of Aeneas. And to me, it's just so much darker that, you know, they had completely burned this city to the ground. And then they like, it's almost like they went and spat on the grave of Carthage by putting Dido in this position. Whereas Dido in, you know, the Carthaginian mythology, the mythology of Phoenicia, we don't have a lot on her, but like would have been this completely badass queen. Like she founded Carthage all by herself. And that alone is so incredible. And then Rome just goes and like completely destroys her name in the Aeneid.
But I think Rome likes to destroy. They don't like women. I mean, the Greeks didn't like women either, but the Romans particularly didn't like powerful Eastern women.
Yeah. And you're right. The Rome just like to destroy. Like, that's a good way to say it.
They destroy everybody. They didn't like women. Look what they did to Boudica. She was this queen that the Romans, she fought against the Romans and and we don't have much information except what the Romans said about her.
Yeah, and they said a lot of bad things about her, absolutely.
And then we have Cleopatra, who is villainized by the Romans. But it's a good thing that the Egyptians write everything down. So you don't have only the Roman account of what happened with Cleopatra, you have the Egyptian side.
Yeah, that's so true. I've never thought of it that way, that like the reason we kind of know more about the truth is that, you know, and she was, Cleopatra's so interesting because, you know, she was the last pharaoh of Egypt. So she was like Egyptian, but she also came from a Greek dynasty in Egypt so she was like a colonizer, but also I think we want to make her Egyptian in this more powerful way in order to kind of, you know, get back at the Romans. So it's an interesting dynamic with her because she was explicitly from like a colonizing dynasty, you know, of the Ptolemies in Egypt. But also she fought against Rome in this way that you want to love.
Yeah. But she was the first of that dynasty to speak Egyptian.
That's true. Yeah. That's the thing. She seemed to really care about Egypt. Absolutely. Like, I don't think, you know, I think she, as far as the Ptolemies go, was probably one of their better rulers of Egypt.
And I think, too, with her on both sides, there's a lot of whitewashing of her and on pop culture, but there's also that extreme, on the opposite side, that Cleopatra is black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, and we don't actually know her parentage, so it's tough to say what she would have looked like in terms of skin color, because we have these depictions of her, but not colored.
Yeah.
Like not, you know, we don't know her skin color because she was on like coins and things like that.
Because, yeah, we know who her father is, but we don't know who her mother is.
Exactly.
We do know that she and her sister did not have the same mother.
Oh, do we? That's interesting.
Yeah. They didn't have the same mother. So everybody's saying that maybe Cleopatra's mother was Ptolemy's wife, half-sister, and her sister's mother was one of his concubines. But we don't know, because we don't know for sure what Cleopatra looked like. And when they're talking about, oh, Caesar fell in love with her beauty, it wasn't beauty. It was the fact she could speak so many languages and she was intellectual and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, she was just impressive. She was like super smart, super impressive. I think she was just like this force, you know? Like, I mean, people want to say she's beautiful, but what we really do know about her is just that she was incredible as a human and as a woman and a leader. And I think, yeah, I mean, why would that not be attractive to somebody like Caesar or Mark Antony?
Although I think Caesar treated her more as an equal than Mark Antony. That's my opinion.
You think so? Interesting. I don't know enough about their relationship, but I always kind of liked the Mark Antony one from what little I know.
From what? No, even the Mark Antony one was more about sex. And even when you read it, even when you read, when you get away from the Roman version, you go into their relationship historically. What about money, sex, flaunting stuff? They did a lot of flaunting their money and everything like that. So that was, but Caesar and her were more of a political, they were more about politics and trying to make their own dynasty or whatever. So, so that's why I say I think like Caesar's relationship with Cleopatra was the one of equals, one of intellectual equal, one of political equals, while her with Mark Antony was of the broccoli.
Yeah, just like showing off, and yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I had the women from the Partial Historians podcast last year come on and talk about Cleopatra, and that was really fascinating because I've never gotten into that history. My love of the ancient world is pretty specifically in like archaic and classical period, and then everything beyond I'm not particularly familiar with.
Have you made the switch to Knix? Millions of women have made the switch to the revolutionary period underwear from Knix. That's K-N-I-X. Period panties from Knix are like no other, making them the number one leak-proof underwear brand in North America. They're comfy, stylish, and absorbent, perfect for period protection from your lightest to your heaviest days. They look, feel, and machine wash just like regular underwear, but feature incognito protection that has you covered. You can shop sizes from extra small to 4XL. Choose from all kinds of colors, prints, and different styles, from bikinis to boy shorts, thongs to high-rise. You've got to try Knix. See why millions are ditching disposable, wasteful period products and have switched to Knix. Go to knix.com and get 15% off with promo code TRY15. That's Knix.com, promo code TRY15 for 15% off life-changing period underwear. That's KNIX.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Interesting though how people now like to whitewash Greek and Rome and forget about the East, but Christianity and Eastern religion overtook that area.
Mm-hmm.
Came from the East.
Well, it's so similar to like the whitewashing of Jesus. Right, this idea that Jesus was this white guy, you're like, where do you think he was from? Like,
he's not.
Yeah, no, there's no way he was what we would consider now to be white. And that's the interesting thing too, right? Like, all of this stems from the much more modern idea of whiteness and blackness and, you know, everything that, whereas back then, again, like, they wouldn't have thought anything of it. It wasn't about that, and that's what's so interesting too. And I think this sort of comes back to, or it connects with the way that statuary from the ancient world has contributed to this idea, right? Because all of the statues we have now, like today, they look very white simply because marble is white, but they would have all been painted. And so back then, they would have much more obviously shown people's real characteristics and, you know, their skin tone, and, you know, it would have shown so much more of their character. And I think that if we had the color, the polychromy left on all these statues, it would be a very different discussion. And I wonder how easy it would have been to whitewash all of this if we still had that, you know?
How easy, I also wonder how easy it would be to consider Greeks and Italians as whites in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like all of it would just be really different because, I mean, and like you said earlier too, that is all so new as well. And it comes from a place of power. It doesn't come from a place of skin color, because all of it comes from a place of wanting to retain power and just like wanting to keep marginalized people down. And yeah, I mean, obviously it's obvious. It's so dark and fucked up. But it is, when you really like dive into where it all comes from and why and how it got like this, it really is like darkly fascinating to consider how this went from, you know, a world of ancient Greece and Rome, which were, like we're saying, you know, full of immigrants. People traveled the whole of the Mediterranean. They interacted with each other. They moved around. They, you know,
they fought wars.
Yeah. Yeah, they fought wars, and then they had peacetime traveling. Well, it probably wasn't, you know, really anything like official peacetime, but people did move around. And, you know, there were Greeks in Africa, and there were Greeks in the Middle East, and there were Africans in Greece. And, you know, really everyone was kind of everywhere. And it was just, yeah, the idea now that is so foreign when you look at your pop culture representations primarily, but also, you know, beyond pop culture and more so into the realm of just the way people talk about it and this inherent like whiteness that has been put upon it since then. And in an attempt to just like raise up the Greeks and Romans above everyone else. It's yeah, it's horrible. I mean, obviously it's bad, but it's just like, it fascinates me too, because it is so, it seems so baffling how it could get to this point, you know?
But here's my thing. I always wonder why the classics is always about Greek and Rome, when there are other ancient cultures in around neighbors are around the same time that are writing and have the old mythology and interacting with the Greeks and the Romans, whether it's through war or peacetime or trading, whatever, they're interacting around the same time. So are you saying that classics are they saying that, oh, because they think the Greeks and Romans were white, that the classics should be about these so-called white nations. I always wondered about that, because then you have the ancient Ethiopia, ancient Nubia. You know, they Rome fought a five-year war with them. Why can't they be included in the classic? Why can't Egypt be included? Well, I know Egypt has its own feel, but
But Egypt has its own field almost because of it. It seems to me it's a large part because of the way that white, particularly like British, you know, early like quote unquote archaeologists went and like quote unquote discovered Egypt, right? Like Egypt then also had a similar whitewashing, but not so much on the people as the archaeology, I guess. You know, you have you just picture that like iconically British sort of colonial outfit, right? And like standing over a tomb they've discovered. So Egypt has this other weird kind of whitewashing involved with it that is, yeah, like more so about the discovery, which is not a discovery of anything. Like it was already there. No, you didn't discover it. But like the way that, yeah, British people have like, you know, the last 200 years, 300 years, really come in and kind of taken over the archaeology of it all. So it's sort of a different level of it. But I think, you know, it's really important what you're saying about classics, and it is all connected to the same problem, right? Like the reason why quote unquote classics basically only includes ancient Greece and ancient Rome is the same Western civilization, Western supremacy, all of that is interconnected. Whereas now, thankfully, a lot of a lot of universities or a lot of people at least are talking about for like, you know, imparting this on universities and calling it ancient Mediterranean studies and making sure that it does include the whole of the ancient Mediterranean, because exactly, they're all interconnected and it's vital that we consider them interconnected, because you can't fully understand ancient Greece without looking at the whole of the ancient Mediterranean, you know, because they were so, you know, interconnected with all these people. And so, yeah, like I think there is a bit of a movement, at least in the right, you know, like the more progressive circles, to address that and change it. And, you know, or at the very least, if you're not going to change what the program is, at least name it correctly. Like the university here in Victoria, they call it Greek and Roman studies, which I don't necessarily think is good. Like you should definitely, you know, have it expanded to the whole of Mediterranean, but at least they're calling it Greek and Roman studies. They're not calling it classics. Yeah. Whereas my degree was classics and we had a couple Egyptian offerings. But otherwise, yeah, it was all Greece and Rome, just called the classics, classical civilizations. And it's definitely, you know, it really adds to the problem and it perpetuates this idea. And it just keeps going and going and going. This idea that Greece and Rome were special, that they were more important, that they did more. All of these things that are inherently tied to whiteness and white supremacy and Western supremacy.
Yeah. And I was telling, when I was having the argument with the guy on Twitter, I was telling him, dude, you can't like say that Rome and Greece were white and they didn't interact much with other people. They didn't really know other people of different color. Hey, there are rumors of Roman legions in China. When that went to China, there are rumors that one of the lost legions of Rome ended up in China. So, yeah, there's no definite proof, but
that yeah. That's interesting. I didn't know that. Yeah. But you're right. They really did travel everywhere. Like, yeah, it's just so inherently flawed and it's so inherently racist to suggest that they were in this little bubble of themselves, just like hanging out, being super, you know, innovative and progressive all by themselves. Like, it's, yeah, it's inherently racist.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the Greeks and the Romans were not all that great, especially the Romans, but.
Yeah, really. That's why I love Greece.
Yeah. They didn't like anything that was in Greek or Roman, but it had nothing to do with your skin color. It's basically if you didn't assimilate to Roman or Greek culture, if you weren't speaking Greek or Latin.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I never want these kind of discussions to suggest that the Greeks and the Romans were like all lovey-dovey with the whole of the Mediterranean or the, you know, with everyone. They really were like, they had their own deep-seated xenophobia. It's just that it wasn't based on your skin color. So that part is kind of out. But yeah, exactly. Like Rome specifically, like I don't know as much about Rome, but I, you know, they were certainly particularly shitty to other people and just conquering the hell out of everybody. But Greece, it was really all about like, did you speak Greek? Do you speak Greek? Were you from like a Greek town? Then you're okay. And it doesn't matter what you look like. But if you're not, if you don't speak Greek, yeah, you're a barbarian, right? Like the word barbarian comes from just like not speaking Greek.
Yeah.
And then we now use it as a horrible term to describe like a very specific type of person that is then inherently racist, because it's literally comes from just, you don't speak Greek, you're a barbarian.
Basically, you could have been white. It could be as white as Lily, and if you didn't speak Greek.
Yeah, you're a barbarian. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, right? And those things have gotten so lost over time. And as, you know, white nations have built up this, like, increasing power of Western supremacy and white supremacy, and then all of that gets lost into what we think the word barbarian means. It's one of my favorite fun facts that I learned in university, the origin of the word barbarian. And it's sort of been my like go-to forever, because I think it's so fascinating, just essentially coming from the sound they described people not speaking Greek made, like bar, 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 you're not speaking Greek, you're a barbarian. And it's just the way that word has evolved is dark and disturbing, but also fascinating in all of those ways where it is dark and disturbing.
Yeah, and the Romans enslaved everyone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Equal
labor.
Yeah. They were like equal opportunity enslavers. Absolutely. Yeah.
Equal opportunity conquerors. Yeah.
That's the thing, too. That's a really good point, because I think it also often gets kind of lost You know, people talk all about the Egyptians enslaving people and that like false idea that enslaved people built the pyramids, which is not true. But people tend to then completely gloss over the fact that ancient Greece also had enslaved people. I do think it's pretty obvious because of things like Gladiator that Rome had enslaved people, at least. Like, I guess that doesn't get forgotten. But the Greeks enslaved everybody too. Not as bad as Rome, but also not as bad as Rome, I think, just because they weren't as like widespread for as long a period of time. Not necessarily because they were, you know, in any way like kinder or more, you know, sympathetic than Rome.
Not really. I think that if they had become a superpower, if they had just united and become a superpower, they would have totally probably been like Rome.
Well, exactly. Like if Alexander maybe hadn't died when he did, and if his kingdom hadn't split up in the way that it did, they probably would have just been exactly as bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess Alexander, he was the son of Zeus, according to his mother. But I think, too, he was so focused on conquering and building the empire than running it. And he didn't think, I don't think he thought that he was going to die. Although people didn't live long as they did now, but still, yeah.
No, but yeah, 32 is young. He definitely thought he was pretty invincible, which is probably, you know, how he ended up dying at 32. If you live life like you're a god, it's not going to go that well, especially in ancient Greece.
Well, if your mother tells you that you're a god, your father's a god, and then you go to the oracle in Egypt, and then the priestess lie to you and say that you're a god, then you got to think that you're a god.
Yeah, he had so much evidence.
But this is what I figure happened to Caesar too.
Yeah.
Because the family was, they say the family was the descendants of Venus.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, well, and that's interesting too. And I don't know enough about what the timeline is there, because so much of that came after Caesar as a way to deify him, right? Like after he had died, they were like, he was the son of a goddess, you know, or not a son of a goddess, but he was descended from Venus. Aeneas is in our bloodline. Like,
yeah. But destroying the fall of city, he's a black guy.
Oh, Aeneas is? That's great. Yeah. I feel like I should watch it just for all of that. I didn't really realize. I got to the judgment of Paris and I was just kind of like, this is bad. And then I didn't keep going, but it was more so, yeah, like about the dialogue and it also just looked so much. And that was the only moment I can remember is the judgment of Paris, but it looked so much like it was filmed in the UK that I was like, this is distracting.
I read some part that they wanted to do like a sequel for either him or
Odysseus, yeah.
But because it didn't work out financially, they didn't make big bucks.
That's disappointing. I mean, but at the same time, the only sequel I really want for Odysseus would have been Sean Bean from Troy.
What's his name? Not Odysseus.
Aeneas, yeah.
Aeneas. Yeah, I think they could have done a sequel. They could have done that. I mean, there's so many bad movies and stuff that did sequel. They could have done a sequel. I guess they were disappointed they didn't get the response that they... Because we don't see much of him in pop culture.
No, not at all.
Yeah, there was so much backlash against Zeus being a black guy. So maybe that too did not really... they didn't want to take another risk.
Yeah. That's the thing, right? I mean, so often Hollywood and pop culture are, like, even if they're not saying it out loud, like, they're trying to, you know, keep the ultimately racist white people very happy. And that's why movies like Troy and Clash of the Titans are all very white. And granted, those are old movies now, so, but at the same time, I don't see a lot of, you know, new ones getting it any better or getting it any more correct.
No, they haven't. And then you have the gods of Egypt that was trash.
At least that one was, like, dragged. Like, I think they knew the mistake they'd made pretty quickly, you know? But even still, you know, it didn't stop further movies. But at least, you know, you can't just make a movie that explicitly is about Egypt and then make everyone white. Like, that's wild.
Except that one black guy.
I can't believe I just had to look this up and I didn't realize it's Chadwick Boseman who plays Thoth in Gods of Egypt.
Oh yeah,
my god, like one of the most incredible people.
Yeah,
holy shit. Yeah, he's the best. Oh, I miss him. Yeah. That just makes me want to talk about Black Panther, but that won't really fit.
No,
that's a great movie.
As for me, as a black woman, seeing all these black people from the all these black actors, but all these black people in one movie, and then it's not this typical stereotype of ghetto or sex or whatever, because the black women are, the movies that have come out of black people and won Oscars and all the awards, either it's a slavery movie, it's a slutty movie, or it's some stealing or something like that. But
yeah,
Black Panther was just, and they portrayed a positive African black country. So for me as a black person, it was really, I loved.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, I read a lot of things around that time, and yeah, and what you're saying too about awards and things, like, I think I read a lot of people talking about it, that the ones that win awards are about black pain in some kind of way.
Yeah.
Or more often than not, it's about like white saviors of black pain. And it's like, oof, that's dark shit. Like, I mean, the fact that Chadwick Boseman didn't win an Oscar, a posthumous Oscar last year, was a fucking travesty.
Yeah. I agree.
But even like, you know, like obviously I'm very white, but watching Black Panther, I could only imagine how powerful it would be to see all of that. Because even as a white person watching it, I was like, this is important. Like, you're watching this and nothing about it, it's not about them, you know, overcoming something. That's not about pain. It's just like a badass superhero movie featuring all black people, where there's like one nice white guy and one bad white guy, and then that's it. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's important, you know?
Yeah. So then whitewashing Greece and Rome is just, I feel like people who do that are just racist and trashy people.
Yep. And I think a lot of it too, like, it, you know, like I was saying earlier too, a lot of people don't realize they're doing it. But if, you know, if things like that are pointed out to you, where really it's like, nah, like this idea that Greece and Rome invented everything, that they were better, that they were special, like, has some inherent racism in it. You know, as long as once you learn that, you kind of are actively working against it. I think, you know, that's the key, right? Because you really do grow up just being told that, and you have to kind of look at it and be like, wait, no. You know, and I think that's the tough part, because it is so ingrained in at least North American culture that you actually have to look for the truth.
Yeah.
and find it yourself. And then, yeah. And then, you know, and when it's done consciously, like, obviously, yeah, there's like a deep, deep racism involved, because it's just, yeah, when it's conscious effort to, you know, the use of Greece and Rome and their like iconography by white supremacy and stuff, like, that's very common, and that'll, you know, that in itself is like, get me out of here. There's very much, you know, as somebody who has this platform in when it comes to Greek mythology, thankfully I don't deal with it a lot, because I'm outwardly feminist and white supremacist also tends to be misogynist, so they tend to avoid me from the beginning, so I don't have to deal with a lot of that. But I know a lot of people, you know, when you're talking about Greece and Rome, like, you're, you know, inherently trying to get rid of those people, make sure they're not, you know, on your platform and stuff, and to sort of like keep the racists out of the room.
Yeah. But what I find so confusing, how people put Greece and Rome like the pillars. But yes, I understand that the Greeks and the Italians are migrating to the US and other places, mm-hmm. and then at the time were not the same as the ancient Greece, but that is part of the culture. So, and whoever was saying that Greece and Rome invented everything, Greece and Rome are white cultures, white Western civilization, and then you're saying to these people, oh, you can't come because you're not white at the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it is that it's more so about, like, disconnecting ancient Greece and ancient Rome from modern Italy and modern Greece. You know, it's as if they want them to be two separate things, because one you can connect to this idea of like the foundation of Western civilization. And then the other are just like normal people, you know? And so it's, yeah, it's an interesting thing when it comes to that, because, you know, it's also like, it's it's the architecture of these places that's often used, you know, it's like the US and all the neoclassical architecture that's like all over the Eastern US from when they founded the country, right? Like they were just making these connections, because it's, I think it's more so about Western civilization, which has then become, you know, a word, like a buzzword for white supremacy, but originally was more about the West and had inherent whiteness in it. But it is about, you know, the Northwest really being this, like the ideal kind of the founding everything.
Yeah. And then you use them is that after a while, when you see that they probably align themselves with other people, like their ancestors usually did, interacting with other people that were not Greek or Roman or white, mm-hmm. you decide, oh, well, you're welcome to our club now. You're white.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it just becomes, you know, it has taken on a completely different meaning, all of it, you know? Yeah. Oh, it's also interesting. Well, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Where can people find you? Is there anything you want to tell my listeners about or promote?
Well, I have a Patreon where I write articles about mythology and religion, mental health, sexual assault, and history and feminism. So a lot of topics. And I even have some of my fiction there. So subscribe to my Patreon at Patreon Caribbean Feminist Scholar. I'm also on Instagram as Isle Theologian. And I'm also on Twitter under the same name, Isle Theologian.
I will put all those links in the episode description so everyone can click on everything there.
All right.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. Ugh, nerds, thank you so much for listening. As always, I'm so thrilled to have spoken with Princess for this episode. It's so interesting hearing from someone who has a background in a different ancient historical time period, but still has all of this knowledge and passion for Greek myths too, and more knowledge of pop culture than me. Lots of me making claims about Troy, Fall of a City, and Gods of Egypt based entirely on random things I've heard, because sometimes I just do that. But it was so interesting getting to talk about those things and be reminded of that time in the wide realm of pop culture and classical reception in movies. Thank you all. You're the best. I am Liv, and I love this shit.
Have you made the switch to NYX? Millions of women have made the switch to the revolutionary period underwear from NYX. That's K-N-I-X. Period panties from NYX are like no other, making them the number one leak-proof underwear brand in North America. They're comfy, stylish, and absorbent, perfect for period protection from your lightest to your heaviest days. They look, feel, and machine wash just like regular underwear, but feature incognito protection that has you covered. You can shop sizes from extra small to 4XL. Choose from all kinds of colors, prints, and different styles, from bikinis to boy shorts, thongs to high-rise. You've got to try NYX. See why millions are ditching disposable, wasteful period products and have switched to NYX. Go to knix.com and get 15% off with promo code TRY15. That's knix.com, promo code TRY15 for 15% off life-changing period underwear. That's KNIX.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com. That's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.